The scripture reading this evening is from 2 Samuel chapter 1, verses 17 through 27. And David lamented with his lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. And he bade them teach the children of Judah the song of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher, "Thy glory, O Israel, is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew nor rain upon you, neither fields of offerings, for the shield of the mighty was vilely cast away, the shield of Saul not anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet delicately, who put ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain in thy high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen and the weapons of war perished?"
We have for some time been discussing some Old Testament studies that some of the younger classes have been studying, some of the characters. And I've tried to preach some lessons along the line of the things that they've been discussing in their classes that might not only draw their attention to the things they're studying, that we can preach on those things and draw some valuable lessons from them, but also that those who are members of the body of Christ and those who are older may very well be able to derive some lessons that might be edifying, that might build us up and help us to learn some things that will help us to live closer unto the Lord. Inspiration immortalizes friendship. In the text that we want to study tonight, we read of the account of one of the most beautiful friendships that we can read of in human history. We talk about David and Jonathan. David and Jonathan were very dear friends. Of course, considering that Jonathan was the son of Saul, the first king of Israel, and that David, the son of Jesse, described as the sweet singer of Israel, a man after God's own heart, hated so much by Saul, as David was gaining greater popularity than King Saul was. And Saul having been rejected as king over Israel, and David anointed to be the next king. And the women singing that Saul hath slain his thousands and David his 10,000s. It became the earnest desire of King Saul to kill David, Jonathan's best friend. And so the friendship between these two becomes very exemplary of things that we want to have and to learn regarding the value of friends. Jonathan, in 1 Samuel chapter 20, is making a covenant with David. Because, as we mentioned, King Saul, Jonathan's father, desires to take the life of David. Jonathan does not want his friend to be killed. And so he says to him in verse 17 of 1 Samuel chapter 20, "Jonathan caused David to swear again for the love that he had to him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul. Then Jonathan said unto him, Tomorrow is the new moon, and thou wilt be missed, because thy seat will be empty." The observance of the new moon was important because Saul's important subjects were to eat at the king's table. Knowing that David's life was being threatened, Jonathan had made an arrangement with David that he was to distance himself from the king's house And as we continue in this covenant, in verse 19, Jonathan said, "And when thou stayed 3 days, thou shalt go down quickly, and shall come to the place where thou didst hide thyself when the business was at hand, and shalt remain by the stone Ezel. And I will shoot 3 arrows on the side thereof, as though I shot at a mark. And behold, I will send the lad, saying, Go find the arrows. If I say unto the lad, Behold, the arrows are on this side of thee. Take them and come. For there is peace to thee and no hurt, as Jehovah liveth. But if I say thus unto the boy, Behold, the arrows are beyond thee. Go thy way, for Jehovah has sent thee away. And as touching the matter which thou and I have spoken of, behold, Jehovah is between thee and me forever." Jonathan makes arrangements with David so that David's life will be spared. But I want to call your attention in this covenant. We'll talk about it in greater detail in just a moment. But in verse 18, "When Jonathan said unto him, Tomorrow is the new moon, and thou wilt be missed because thy seat is empty." That statement takes on a great deal of significance, because David would have otherwise been there. And King Saul would certainly note that David's seat was empty. But not only would King Saul know that, but certainly Jonathan, David's best friend, would know that David was not there and that the occasion had demanded of David to flee for his life. And so the relationship between Jonathan and David really becomes the definition of a friend. In Webster's dictionary, and everybody accepts Webster, I suppose, he says that a friend is one attached to another by affection or esteem. We see that to be infinitely true between Jonathan and David. They had an affection between them. And they had a respect for each other. As we look further in our study tonight, what real benefit is that? You know, sometimes I'm so thankful for my friends. I don't know, during times of difficulty and even times of great rejoicing, what I would do in my life without friends. A number of years ago, I preached a man's funeral where they had to seek pallbearers to carry his casket. There were only 4 or 5 people at that man's funeral. He was 80-something years old. I thought to myself, what a pity. Here's a man that's lived all these years and has not influenced more people, has not been involved in any more people's lives than this. That's sad. To die and live all that long time and not have any friends. What a pity. It's an advantage to have friends. We're going to look briefly at some Old Testament proverbs in particular, to emphasize what it means to have a friend. In Proverbs chapter 17 and in verse 17, the wisdom writer said, "A friend loveth at all times." As someone said, "Even when there's a wart on your nose, your friends like you." And thus, the lesson is, we all need friends. Somebody to care about us. They stick closer than a brother. The wisdom writer again said, "There is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. Thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not, and go not to thy brother's house in the day of thy calamity. Better is a neighbor that is near than a brother far off." What a great treasure it is to have a friend. Further we note that the wisdom writer said, "Oil and perfume rejoice the heart. So doth the sweetness of a man's friend by hearty counsel." You know, when you're down, there's nothing like talking to a good friend to cheer you, to help you, to help you to understand that you're not alone, to advise you along the way. Friends, they support you when times are troublesome. Again, the wisdom writer in the book of Ecclesiastes in the 4th chapter said, "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, and hath not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have warmth. But how can one be warm alone? And if a man prevail against him that is alone, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not easily broken. Now, those of you who are younger in the audience this evening, well understand that if you take a small thread of string, well, you can break that. But let's suppose that you weave several small threads of string together. Well, before long, you have a rope. You can pull an automobile with that. It's not easily broken. And so it is with a man and his friends. In our Galatians study, and I know that I appeal to that a great deal, but it's a valuable study. In the Galatian letter in the 5th chapter, the writer recognizes the difficulty that existed among these brethren relative to the practice of circumcision and the keeping of the law. And in the 5th chapter, in verse 15, the writer said, "But if ye bite and devour one another, take heed that ye be not consumed one of another." And then he begins to elaborate on what it means to walk according to the Spirit versus walking according to the flesh. And then in the 6th chapter, beginning in verse 1, it implies that there are some among them who no longer walk after the Spirit, but are fallen. They've been overtaken in a fault. In verse 1 it says, "Brethren, if a man or even if a man be overtaken in any trespass, ye who are spiritual, restore such a one in a spirit of gentleness, looking to thyself, lest thou also be tempted. Bear ye one another's burdens, and so fulfill the law of Christ." We studied this text down through verse 10 and noted that the context of this passage is dealing with helping our brethren who are overcome by sin. Look again at the writing of the wisdom writer. "Two are better than one, because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe unto him that is alone when he falleth, and hath not another to help him up." Isn't it a marvelous thing to know that you have friends who are brethren, that if you falter, that they love and care about you enough to try to do something to help you, that you might go to heaven? That's what Galatians 6, verse 1 is all about. Why do we have friends? This writer says, "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend." That's an interesting verse to me, because it doesn't say that a flint rock sharpens iron. It doesn't say a stone sharpens iron. It says iron sharpeneth iron, indicating that here we have two that are equal, but yet one helps the other. The idea is, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Now, the idea of a countenance, you remember in Genesis chapter 4, when Cain and Abel offered a sacrifice unto the Lord, and Cain offered the fruit of the ground, and it tells us that his countenance fell. Well, the idea of countenance really is embodied in the face, a change in the face. Well, what does this passage tell us? Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. Very simply, a friend can help his friend with whatever problems he might have. He can help his friend. And we need to see that. We value and treasure one another's friendship. What is a friend, and what will he do for you? You know, one of the blessings of having a friend is to know that when he rebukes me, it's because of my good. He wants to help me. In Proverbs chapter 27, in verses 5 and 6, the wisdom writer said, "Better is open rebuke than love that is hidden. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are profuse," that is, they're deceitful. A friend who always tells you good things is really not a friend. A friend is one who wants to help you to go to heaven. And if there's blunders and errors in your life, he wants you to know about that so that you can fix that. Let me ask you a question, beloved. Any of you ever spank your children? Maybe Donna and I are the only ones who ever did that. But why do you do that? Don't you sit down with them generally after such an episode and remind them how much you love them? How much you want them to do right? Why do you do that? Well, it's because you love them. You want them to do right. What kind of friend is a man who only gives you compliments and never points out the things that you're doing that you need to correct? A friend does that. A friend does that. What will a friend do for you? He will show pity to you. Now, Job recognized that. Job, who had lost everything that he had in the sight of one day, when his friends supposedly came to him to comfort him, Job said in chapter 6 and verse 14, "To him that is ready to faint, kindness should be showed from his friend." Job didn't get that out of his friends. But he recognized the principle that sometimes when we're suffering, those of our friends suffer with us. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But Job recognized the principle of how that a friend shows kindness, shows pity toward you. Here's our passage. In Romans, the 12th chapter, as the Apostle Paul is discussing the transformation, the changed life that is to take place among these who have become Christians. And he points out that they're not to be like the world, verse 2. They're to be transformed. A part of that transformation involves certain characteristics. Beginning in verse 9, they're to love without hypocrisy. And you can go down through this text, but when you get to verse 15, it says, "Rejoice with them that rejoice, weep with them that weep." You see, a friend is not one who's jealous and envious because something good has happened to you. He delights with you in your joy. But a friend who is one who, when he knows you're hurting, he extends sympathy because he knows what that feels like. He rejoices and he weeps because he's your friend. In the book of Luke, I want to call your attention to the 15th chapter because we see great occasion for rejoicing when one who was lost is found. In Luke, the 15th chapter, reading beginning at verse 1 for the setting of the text, it says, "Now all the publicans and sinners were drawing near unto him to hear him. And both the Pharisees and the scribes murmured, saying, This man receiveth sinners and eateth with them." Well, why was that so horrible? Well, because they wouldn't do that. They set themselves above the publicans and the sinners. But yet Jesus associated with them, and we note in verse 3, he begins to illustrate the point. There was a man who had 100 sheep, and he lost one, and he went out to find it. And when he found it, he called together his friends and his neighbors, verse 6, and he said, "I have found my sheep that was lost. Rejoice with me," he said. In verse 7, "I say unto you that even so there shall be joy in heaven over one sinner that repenteth more than over 99 righteous persons who need no repentance." And then he illustrates with a woman who had coins and she lost one. And she swept the house diligently to find the one that was lost. And when she found it, she called together who? Her friends and neighbors and said, "Rejoice with me. I have found that which was lost." And then the younger brother, you recall, who used his inheritance to go into a far land. And he lived it up with riotous living. And when he returned home, the father gave a great feast, pointing out that this my son that was lost is now found, and it was meet to be merry. But the older son was angry and would not go in. He found no occasion to rejoice, but rather ridiculed not only his brother, but his father for making merry upon the return of this boy who was lost. Now the attitude of the elder brother, of course, displays the attitude of the scribes and the Pharisees in the chapter. But the point I want you to see is the need to rejoice. When something good happens, it's occasion to rejoice because we're friends. What will a friend do for you? Well, Jesus said he will lay down his life for you. In John chapter 15 and in verse 13, Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, than a man lay down his life for his friends." In 1 John chapter 3 and in verse 16, that expression is reiterated. 1 John chapter 3, verse 16, "Hereby we know love, because he laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for the brethren." That's what a friend does. Jesus described this attribute as a badge of discipleship. Look at John chapter 13, verses 34 and 35, and look at it carefully. "For there Jesus said, A new commandment give I unto you, that ye love one another, even as I have loved you. So shall ye love one another, and by this shall all men know that ye are my disciples." Now the import of that is to see that qualifying factor, "even as I have loved you." You see, loving each other was not new. But loving each other to the degree of laying down one's life.
That's what Jesus says is the badge of discipleship. That's what a friend is. Now, this question is sometimes asked by young people. How do we make friends? Well, you can make friends, but you can't buy them. You can't buy friends. Proverbs chapter 19, verse 6 says, many will entreat the favor of the liberal man, and every man is a friend of him that giveth gifts. Isn't that so? Everybody wants to be a friend of the man who's wealthy that gives things away. Everybody wants to be his friend. But what about the other side? In Proverbs 14, verse 12, the poor is hated even of his own neighbor, but the rich hath many friends. We noted the prodigal son a few moments ago. When he took his inheritance and went into a far country, and there he lived it up with riotous living, no doubt he had many friends. But when it was all gone, and there was a famine, and he's in the pig pen, and would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did eat, notice that next expression. No man gave unto him. Where are his friends now? Well, he doesn't have any friends. Why? Because he doesn't have any money. He doesn't have the jolly life that he once had. His friends are all gone. Indeed, beloved, you can't buy friends. The prodigal son couldn't do that. Well, then how do you make friends? Somebody said, well, you know, folks are not friendly to me. Well, be a friend. In Proverbs 18, verse 24, it says, the man that hath friends must show himself friendly. Isn't that simple? That's not hard, is it? You want to make friends, then be friendly. Sometimes on my charts and in my notes, I put this word up there. Note this so I don't forget it. To be someone's friend, you must take the time to be with that person. Get to know that person. Serve that person's needs. If you are unwilling to devote your time to that person, then you won't have any friends. Isn't that simple? So if you want to be a friend to somebody else, you prove yourself friendly. How to make friends? Be loyal. The wisdom writer said in Proverbs chapter 27 and verse 10, thine own friend and thy father's friend forsake not. If you want to have friends, don't betray them. Now that's important. Be loyal. Be true. In Proverbs 25, the writer tells us, confidence in an unfaithful man in time of trouble is like a broken tooth and a foot out of joint. Picture that, if you would. You want to have confidence in somebody and call them your friend. That's like trying to get along with a broken tooth and a foot that's broken. That don't work too good. How to make friends? Well, you use gracious speech. Now, by that I simply mean, as the writer said, he that loveth pureness of heart for the grace of his lips, the king shall be his friend. Nobody likes to be around somebody that's always fussing, complaining, and murmuring. Nobody likes that, especially if they hear it over and over and over and over. But the man who speaks kindly, graciously, even the king shall be his friend. In Proverbs 25 and verse 11, the text tells us a word fitly spoken is like apples of gold in network of silver. I sometimes use that passage when I'm talking about the husband-wife relationship. But it's not just restricted to that relationship. It certainly is applicable when we talk about friends. The tongue, used wisely, oh, it can be so valuable. It's likened to choice silver. It's likened to health. It's called the tree of life. It's called a precious jewel. It can be very valuable, especially in preserving and making friendships. But you know, there are some things that will just destroy our friendships. And we need to think about them. We talked about money a moment ago. You can't buy friends with money, but you can destroy friendships with it. You'll notice in Proverbs chapter 6, read with me verse 1. Proverbs chapter 6, verse 1. There the writer says, my son, if thou art become surety for thy brother, if thou hast stricken thine hands for a stranger, thou art snared with the words of thy mouth. Thou art taken with the words of thy mouth. Do this now, my son, and deliver thyself. Seeing thou art come into the hand of thy neighbor, go humble thyself and importune thy neighbor. Give not sheep to thine eyes, nor slumber to thine eyelids. Deliver thyself as a roe from the hand of the hunter, and as a bird from the hand of the fowler. What's he teaching us? He's teaching us that if we give ourselves as a surety, as a pledge or guarantee for another, then we're likely to get into trouble. You know why? When you turn back to Nehemiah chapter 5 and you read how that they were borrowing from their brethren to pay their taxes, and they were giving their sons and their daughters as a surety, as a guarantee, a pledge that they would pay back the money. What then happened? It began to divide the people. And the building of the walls around the city of Jerusalem ceased. You see the wisdom writer's point? When you give yourself as a pledge or a guarantee for another, you're promising money, and that can get you into trouble. Let me illustrate. Someone told me a number of years ago that if you could meet somebody on Sunday morning every week, and just out of the goodness of your heart, you give them a $10 bill just because you want to help. And you do that next Sunday and the next Sunday, and you make a habit of that. You will be praised as some kind of God, but let you miss one Sunday, and you'll be worse than the devil himself. Well, you think about this passage. Isn't that what the writer is saying? When you in summation have promised something and then you don't deliver, you've created a wedge of division between friendships. Look further. Whispering and gossip. How many young people have come to those of us who are parents and say, "My friend's been talking about me. My friend's been telling this." All of you have experienced that who are parents, haven't you? And you see the hurt and the disappointment in the eyes of the child. Do we not also see that among those who are older? You see, a loose tongue will destroy friendships. I don't care how old you are. The King James translation tells us, "He that harpeth on a matter repeateth a matter," as the King James translation reveals it, "separateth very friends." I find the wording of that interesting, but you see the point. A man who can't keep his mouth shut, always talking about his friends, will destroy a friendship. What else would destroy a friendship? We've talked about David, in fact, last week. And we talked about some of the things that broke King David's heart. One of those things was when his son Absalom rebelled and tried to take the people and their loyalty away from David. War broke out. Finally, Absalom was killed, and David's heart was broken. But in the context of that, we read in Psalms chapter 41, as written by David, verse 9, he lamented, saying, "Yea, mine own familiar friend, in whom I trusted, which did eat of my bread, hath lifted up his heel against me." Those in whom David had cast his trust have now become his enemies. Is it any surprise to you that you see that alluded to in John chapter 13 and verse 18 when the Lord recognized that Judas Iscariot would betray him? His own familiar friend has now become his enemy. Jonathan and David, close friends. Turn back, if you will, to the writing of Samuel. 1 Samuel chapter 18. 1 Samuel chapter 18. Let's begin reading at verse 1. And I want to read with you verses 1, 2, and 3. 1 Samuel chapter 18. Let's read through verse 4. "And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David. And Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more home to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him and gave it to David, and his apparel, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle." Jonathan and David were friends. They were very close. They loved each other. In the 20th chapter of 1 Samuel, chapter 20, look beginning, if you will, at verse 17. "And Jonathan caused David to swear again for the love that he had for him, for he loved him as he loved his own soul." Such close friends. You know, sometimes the friendships that we make when we're young, they're lifetime friendships. Jonathan and David became, as it were, lifetime friends, though Jonathan's life ended rather short. They learned to love each other. Close friends. Jonathan had preserved David's life from harm and intervened on his behalf. Look again, if you will, in 1 Samuel chapter 19, beginning in verse 1. And Saul spake unto Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should slay David. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeketh to slay thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take heed to thyself in the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee. And if I see aught, I will tell thee. Jonathan does not want anything bad to happen to David, his friend, even if it means standing against his father. In 1 Samuel chapter 20, begin reading at verse 1. And David fled from Naoth in Ramah, and came and said before Jonathan, What have I done? What is mine iniquity? And what is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life? And he said unto him, Far from it. Thou shalt not die. Behold, my father doeth nothing, either great or small, but that he discloseth it to me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. And David sware moreover and said, Thy father knoweth well that I have found favor in thine eyes. And he saith, Let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. But truly as Jehovah liveth and as thy soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. Then said Jonathan unto David, Whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee. And David said unto Jonathan, Behold, tomorrow is the new moon, and I should not fail to sit with the king at meat. But let me go, that I may hide myself in the field unto the third day at even. If thine father miss me at all, then say, David earnestly asked leave of me that he might run to Bethlehem, his city. And it is the yearly sacrifice there for all the family. If he say thus, it is well, thy servant shall have peace. But if he be wroth, then know that evil is determined by him. Therefore deal kindly with thy servant, for thou hast brought thy servant unto a covenant of Jehovah with thee. But if there be in me iniquity, slay me thyself. For why shouldest thou bring me to thy father? And Jonathan said, Far be it from thee. For if I should at all know that evil were determined by my father to come upon thee, then would not I tell it thee? Then said David to Jonathan, Who shall tell me if perchance thy father answered thee roughly? And Jonathan said unto David, Come, and let us go out into the field. And they went out, both of them, into the field. And then following, we learn in these next several verses of the covenant that Jonathan makes with David to preserve his life. You see, Jonathan's loyalty to David cost him. It cost him his relationship with his father. He turned against his father in order that he might prove his friendship with David. Now, interestingly enough, you recall that when King Saul went in to offer sacrifice, which Samuel told him, I will do. And Saul said, I forced myself to do it in 1 Samuel chapter 13. And then again in 1 Samuel chapter 15, when he did not slay the Amalekites, as God had instructed him to do. On both occasions, Samuel told him, the kingdom has been taken away from you. God desires that somebody would serve him with his own heart. Indeed, David did. But the kingdom was to be taken away from King Saul. Friend, what does that mean for Jonathan? Jonathan won't ever be a king. The lineage was removed from King Saul. It was not to be established through his lineage. But it would come through the lineage of another. Now, Jonathan, knowing that, what did that do to his relationship with David? Nothing. He loved him all the more. Even though he knew he would never be king, he still loved David. You know why? Because they were friends. When Saul and Jonathan were slain in battle, you remember how Saul went to the witch of Endor because Samuel wouldn't talk to him anymore? The Lord wouldn't talk to him anymore? The witch of Endor allegedly brought up Samuel, and Samuel told him, You're going to be like me tomorrow and your sons. The Scriptures teach us that Jonathan and his brother along with Saul, all died in the battle with the Philistines as Saul had fallen upon his sword. The text tells us in 2 Samuel chapter 1, 2 Samuel chapter 1, beginning in verse 23, that was read in your hearing just a moment ago. 2 Samuel chapter 1, verse 23. It says, 2 Samuel 1, yes, that is it. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were sweeter than angels, they were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothed you in scarlet delicately, who put ornaments of gold upon your apparel. Now look at verse 25. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of the battle? Jonathan is slain upon thy high places. David's love for Jonathan has not diminished at all, even though he died in battle with his father, in battle with the Philistines. You see, after Jonathan died, David still cared for Jonathan and cared for his family. You have no doubt studied, those of you who are younger, have studied about a man whose name was Mephibosheth. If you've not studied about Mephibosheth, you need to do that. Because Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan. Mephibosheth was, well, he was lame in his legs and his feet, as it were. He couldn't walk real good. And so he needed somebody to care for him. David did, because he loved Jonathan. This was the son of his friend. Yes, Jonathan and David were friends. You remember a moment ago as we began our study? And we defined friend by Webster as one attached to another by affection or esteem. Doesn't that accurately describe the relationship between David and Jonathan? They were friends. Friend, that's precious. That's to be cherished. That is to be respected. That's to be treasured. If you've got a friend, you need to tell them how much you think of them. I've often said when I would go away in gospel meetings and come home again that it's good to be home. There are a lot of reasons for that. But one of the reasons is your friends. And friends are valuable. You've listened patiently to our study. Hopefully, maybe something beneficial has helped you to learn what it is to be a friend. Perhaps I'm talking to someone in the audience, however, this evening who's not a Christian. You need to become friends with the Lord, because one day you will face Him and He will judge you for all eternity. And let me assure you, it'll be a whole lot better for you when you face Him in judgment if you face Him as a friend than to face Him as an enemy. If you believe that Jesus is the Christ, you're determined to turn from sin, why not confess your faith tonight? Be buried with Him in baptism, raised to walk a new life, submissive to Him. Maybe you've done that and you've not lived faithfully. Prove yourself to be His friend. Repent of your sins. Serve Him faithfully. If we can help you in any way to make your obedience complete, make it known by coming to the front while we stand and sing this song. I am without